And I just pulled up this picture here of the pelvis, so that we can get a really clear idea of exactly what and how and what we do about the sacroiliac joints. So first of all, the sacroiliac joints forms a critical link between the lower spine and the pelvis. Okay, so we can sort of see here that the sacrum connects into the right and left sides of the ilia, and it's connected by really strong ligaments. And for a long time, it was thought that the sacroiliac joints were immobile. And when you look at it here, and when you look at any anatomy pictures, you can see why it was thought to be so immobile. And really, it is inherently an incredibly stable joint. But it's now known that mobility and movement at the sacroiliac joint is essential for the shock absorption and to relieve some of the stresses and strain that go through the lower spine. Now, the joint is a very strong, weight-bearing, transferal, fibrous, and synovial joint. So I think that often we don't realize that it is a synovial joint. It's not just fibrous. There is movement. And it has minimal, those forms of joints have minimal degrees of movement, and they're mainly a gliding movement and some rotation. The main function of the sacroiliac joint is to provide stability and relieve stress and the forces by acting as a buffer between the hip and the lower spine. So they transmit forces from the spine sideways into the pelvis. So they move outwards and then down into the lower limbs and vice versa. So in other words, the forces come up the lower limbs, move sideways, and then up through the spine. And this is mainly by nutation, and this makes me laugh because I always think a bit of the X-Men and want to say mutation, so I'm sure I'm probably saying it wrong. So I think it's nutation and counter-nutation. And nutation is where the sacrum rotates forwards against the ilium. Okay, so that's mild anterior tilt. It's really when I'm walking during gait. We get the sacrum rotating slightly forwards against the ilium, and counternutation is where the sacrum rotates posteriorly against the ilium. So we've got this very slight gliding movement that goes on. The joints have irregular elevations and depressions that produce an interlocking of the two bones, so with the ilium and the sacrum. The sacroiliac joint capsule articular surfaces are made up of two strong layers, which, as we can see, sort of are C-shaped. Okay, the sacral surface, so the sacrum, where the sacrum becomes part of the sacroiliac joints, has a hyaline cartilage. And the ilial surface, so from the ilium, has fibrocartilage. The ligaments that stabilize the sacroiliac joint are the strongest in the body. Okay, they're incredibly strong. So I hope you can see this picture here. You may have to sort of pull it quite close to you. I'm going to talk about the ones that really, really are important for the stability. The first one is the anterior sacroiliac. So you can see that there. We're looking at the pelvis from the front, and you can see it there coming from the sacrum out towards the ilium. And these ligaments are comparatively thin and weak compared to the other ligaments. They're the most often injured of the sacroiliac ligaments. So I'm just going to have to pause a minute while I let that person in to our chat. And I'll just let somebody else in. It's like a doorbell going. So let me come back onto here. So if you wouldn't mind, those of you that have just joined, if you could just mute yourselves, that would be great. And what you should be seeing at the moment is a PowerPoint, a screen share with me, where I'm just talking now about the sacroiliac ligaments. So first of all, I'll just repeat that. We're looking at the anterior sacroiliac ligaments, and these are comparatively thin and weak compared to the other ligaments. They're the most commonly injured, And it's the most common source of pain due to its thinness, okay, because it's such a thin ligament. It's most often injured. I'm going to now take you to the back of the pelvis here. And this is where we've got these fantastic ligaments coming down. So the first one, apologies for my pronunciation, is the interossus sacroiliac. So you can see that. Let me just see where it is for you. Oh gosh, I've lost it now. Hold on. Hang on, let me just go back. Just in case I've jumped ahead. Ah! Gosh, it's... Ah, no. I might have to find you another picture of that one. Bear with me on that one. But this is the major connection between the sacrum, and I'm going to probably say this wrong as well, the innominate, which is really your pelvis. Okay, so I'm just trying to see where on earth is that? Oh, I've chosen the wrong picture. Anyhow, I'll get you another picture for that one. And this is a really strong, short ligament deep to the posterior sacroiliac ligament. So it's actually behind. If you can see on the left side of the picture, you can see that it's pointing to the posterior sacroiliac ligament. This ligament, the interossus sacroiliac, is under that. Hence why we can't see it on this diagram. And what the job of this ligament is it resists the anterior and inferior movement of the sacrum. Okay. So that sort of movement that the sacrum does as with gait and so on. The next one I want you to look at is the posterior sacroiliac ligament. So that lies on top, and we can see that being pointed out to the left of the diagram there, where it's in that block red. And this connects the PSIS, so the posterior superior iliac spine, which is nicely shown there, into the lateral crest of the third and fourth segments of the sacrum. So you can sort of see that it sweeps down into the third and fourth crest there. And this ligament is incredibly strong and tough. And as I sort of saying to you, when with nutation, which is where the sacrum rotates forwards against the ilium, this ligament slackens with nutation. So with that anterior movement of the sacrum, this ligament will slacken. And then with counter nutation, it makes it taunt. And again, this can be very, very much a source of pain. And you can often actually feel it. It's you can feel it down below the PSIS. And it can feel very tender, very sore. Then we're going to come on to the sacrotuberous. Okay, so you can just ligament. So you can just see that down there, down in the bottom right. And they are three large fibrous bands, okay, that blend with the posterior sacroiliac ligament. This stabilizes again against nutation, okay, and counteracts against posterior and superior migration of the sacrum. So I love a migrating sacrum during weight bearing. Okay, so again, really what we're thinking of is they really help to stabilize the pelvis during weight bearing activities. Finally, we've got the sacrospinous ligament, which is there coming from that corner there, just above, you can see the ligament we've just spoken about. And this is triangular shaped, so it sort of comes out into a triangle, and it is thinner. But along with the sacrotuberous ligament, it opposes forward tilting of the sacrum during weight bearing. So you can sort of see the posterior ligaments here really work to counteract the anterior tilting of the pelvis, okay, during gait. So the sacroiliac joints work in perfect harmony, we hope, with the third part of the pelvis, which is the pubic symphysis. And they create a great self-locking mechanism to help us walk. So they're very much aided by the surrounding musculature of the hip adductors especially. So what happens is the pelvic joints brace the weight-bearing side during gait. So we've got the musculature and the pelvic joints really bracing on that weight-bearing side while we walk. This locking system that happens is called force closure. And it allows smooth transference of body weight from one leg to the other. It's really interesting, actually, because no muscles actually directly attach to across the three pelvic joints. They don't bind the three pelvic joints, but rather they work in sync with the ligaments to provide like an amazing anti-gravity spring-like system that absorbs the ascending and descending forces as we walk. So as we pick the leg up, we've got the ascending forces, and as we drop it down, we've got the descending forces. And with the musculature, the ligaments, the pelvis is held in a really nice, stable position, but with that allowance of movement that's really necessary for the shock absorption. And there are actually 35 muscles that attach to the sacrum, okay, or the, the innominate, which really is a fancy word for the three bones of the pelvis, which mainly provides stability to the joint rather than producing actual movement of the joint. I'm not going to ask you to try and guess the 35, but I've got them handily written down here for you. Okay, so you can see there's a huge amount of muscles that help and aid the stability of the pelvis, but also can disrupt and cause dysfunction at the sacroiliac joints. The sacroiliac joint goes through many changes throughout its life. So in early childhood, the surfaces are really smooth, allowing for gliding motions in many directions. After puberty, the surface of the ilium becomes much rougher and starts becoming coated with fibrous plaques that will begin to restrict motion significantly. These age-related changes will increase in the third and fourth decade, and then by the sixth decade, motion may become notably restricted. By the eighth decade, plaque will form and erosion will be present. And in a way, we could see it as something, you know, not so great, but you could also see it as the body being very, very clever and sacrificing mobility for stability as we age. So from the point of view of dysfunction and pain with the sacroiliac joint, accurate diagnosis can be really, really difficult and tricky, and simply because the symptoms mimic very common conditions, such as things like facet joint syndrome, bulging discs, simple low back pain, sciatica. So you can sort of, it can often be misdiagnosed for a long time, which can obviously can be really tricky. And the causes of sacroiliac joint dysfunction are really two. We have hypermobility, which creates an instability with the pelvis, and this is the most common cause of sacroiliac pain. The other one is hypomobility, so that's stiffness of these joints. They don't have that slight gliding movement that we need to for shock absorption. And this, the hypermobility or stiffness, is normally associated with pathologies such as, here we go again, long words for me, ankylosing spondylitis, which is a form of arthritis where we have long-term inflammation of the joints. Or as we've sort of seen that I said about before, simply the aging process itself will create a stiffness as, you know, the amount of mobility we get through the sacroiliac joints lessen. One of the things that they really find is that alignment and muscle balance is the key to sacroiliac joint stability and correct mobility, the correct amount of mobility. So for example, if I've got a weakness in the posterior chain, so for example, my glutes and my hamstrings, and then opposite to that, I have restriction in the anterior chain, so my hip flexors, this will lead to sacroiliac joint dysfunction, sorry. So for us, well, I'll talk about it more in a moment, but we really want to look at the stability and the alignment of the pelvis in order to really help clients with sacroiliac joint dysfunction and pain. So the symptoms of dysfunction that you can see, as I've said, they mimic other back and hip injuries, which is why it's quite tricky to diagnose. You often get pain in the low back, the hip, the groin, the buttock. It can be very much like sciatic pain. It will typically get worse when you're standing or walking, and it often can improve, but not always, when you lie down. It can be very painful to sit cross-legged and to lie on one side for a long time. Bending forwards, climbing stairs, coming from seat to standing can all increase the pain. And the pain can often be on one side, you know, it needn't always be on both sides. Often it's on one side, and it might be for us when they're in our classes, they feel a catch or a pull when they're doing moves like shoulder bridge, when they're doing moves like roll up, things like that, they can feel a little bit of a restriction in part of that. Another thing to note is during pregnancy. Pregnant clients can really, really suffer with sacroiliac joint pain and dysfunction. And this is often due to, first of all, the hormonal changes they're going through with the effects of relaxin and other hormones. I've obviously got a laxity in the ligaments, and that can obviously cause that shift, that hypermobility that we've seen to be one of the main causes of the dysfunction. Also, I've got the weight of the growing uterus, meaning that from a muscular point of view, I'm not as stable. The musculature's under strain. So, you know, I've not got that joint stability that I might normally have. So, you know, with your pregnant clients, it can really be something that occurs very, very frequently. From a treatment point of view, from what I've been reading, it's often set into phases. So your phase one would be definite pain relief and joint protection. And obviously this is where if somebody's suffering with sacroiliac joint dysfunction, you know, you'll be seeing them from a physio, because obviously we're not physios and we don't diagnose. So, you know, you may have referred a client to a physio or other physical therapist, I shouldn't just say physios, for diagnosis, and they've come back with this. And so first of all, the physios will very much look at managing the inflammation within the sacroiliac joints. And this might be through ice therapy, anti-inflammatory medications, sometimes there's injections, sometimes there's other, you know, physio work such as acupuncture and so on. And once the pain and inflammation settles, they'll move on to phase two, where you'll begin to look at the alignment and finding the correct range of movement that there should be around the pelvis. So you'd be looking very much at a stability program, especially of the hip and spine, so that the pelvis and the sacroiliac joints are able to dynamically control and stabilize effectively. Phase three, you'd be looking then once they can undergo this low level, which is obviously often, I think, the trickiest level of stability and control. You'd look at thinking about what the client wants to be doing, what sport do they want to be returning to, what lifestyle activities do they want to return to. So you'd look at then progressing further to ensure that they can, you know, take on that and begin to do that in pain. And then finally, phase four is trying to stop the reoccurrence of the dysfunction, the pain. And often the problem with sacroiliac dysfunction and pain is it often does reoccur. And they generally put this down to the fact that there's been insufficient adherence to their rehab program. So as we know, people often don't do their exercises. But especially with this condition, it really does lead to it being very commonly flaring up again. So it's really trying to encourage that adherence, that, you know, regular exercise program. So finding those short bursts that can be a daily fixture in their lifestyle, you know, to encourage the keeping that program going, really, and keeping the stability and keeping that correct range of movement. So I'm going to come out of that for a moment so I can now see you, and then we can see how we're getting on so far. So just coming onto this, right? Hello, everybody. I'm here. If you just now want to unmute yourselves and ask any questions so far, that would be great. Apologies for those of you that had already started. So Helen, have you got a question?
I think I've got two sides of it. One is that I suffer with this.
Yeah.
So I'm listening to it from my perspective, thinking, oh yes, and then also clients. And I think the biggest thing is the area, because people tend to say, I've got a bad back.
Yes.
They won't go to physios, and they always coming back. You know, they come to you in the classes, and you can't diagnose, you can't say what it is. But is there, irrespective of what it is, so in that general area, I've got lower back pain, and you think it might be that because of what they're saying. But I wouldn't say that,
yeah,
because it's not appropriate. But I'd be really interested that exercises.
Yes.
Do, or the things to modify that say, okay, you know, because it is, I do recognize that catching moment,
yeah,
that,
yeah,
you talked about very much.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the things, is when they're doing certain exercises and they get that catch, and they'll often, sorry, I'll stand up, but they catch down, they'll like go, it's here, and it will be on one side of the pelvis. Do you know what I mean? It won't be in the back, it'll be lower down. And again, it's really difficult because we can't diagnose, so we almost have to think, it could be that. But regardless, Helen, the thing to think of is whatever we do is going to help a lower back issue. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the things to watch out for, Helen, is that catching, that pulling, or when they're doing a move, they'll find an achiness on one side of the back of the hip or the lower back. You'll see sometimes when they're doing a bridge, an unevenness. One side will go higher than the other. Or even when they're just lying flat, and obviously it can be, what's difficult is it could be other reasons, but you'll see the pelvis rotated slightly. Okay, so you'll have, you know, that uneven pelvis in movement. When you're doing things like asking them, and I'd always do this with the head down, is lying on their back and just lifting one leg up, you often see one side very stable, the other side not so stable.
Yeah.
And if you put your hand under their lower back, so you can almost get a fingertip on each vertebra, do you know what I mean? So obviously then, you know, they're going to be quite heavy on your hand, but if you can almost pop a fingertip and you'll feel when they lift a leg, almost one vertebra pops up off your finger. It depends on how you want to work with people, because that can be a little bit, you know, but you'll see a shift in the pelvis that's one side and not the other.
Yeah.
And as I say, often the catching will be on the back of the pelvis rather than, and it's that achiness after standing for a long time, because obviously these ligaments, the main four ligaments that we've discussed that are the strongest, they resist the anterior tilt of the pelvis. So if you've got that hyperlordotic position, you're putting a huge amount of strain onto, I can see you sitting up tall, onto the sacroiliac joints, and you get that achiness. Yeah. So they're the things I'd look for, is that one-sided, you know, and you'll sort of see it very much when they're lying supine, and it's, I'm trying to think if it would happen. You know, we can all be slightly different on the side, but it can be quite noticeable, I think. And yeah, does that answer your question, Helen?
Yes, but also, should you try and get them to create that balance by working harder on the side that's not working well, or do you accommodate the other side?
Yes, now this is difficult, because in a way, when I was looking at doing this stuff and some of the physios I work with, some of the things that they sort of taught me to do, it's difficult because we're not physios. And so things like looking to realign the pelvis is, it's a grey area for us. But I don't know if you've done any of my classes, Helen, where, and for those of you that, that may not have done it with me, but you have, you lie on your back, and this is one of the exercises I do. I actually do it as part of hip replacement stuff as well. It's a really, really nice exercise. And those of you that are on the active aging recently, we did it, it was on the video that I did with you. But what you do is you place your hands onto the outside of the knees. So I'm lying on my back, knees bent, place the hands onto the outside of the thighs. And then what you do is you gently press outwards. Okay, you could use a yoga strap, or you, even though obviously I don't like the word yoga strap, but you know what I mean, like a really hard band, which dressing gown cord, great, tie it round. And you, so it's got to be something really quite restrictive. You can use your own hands, as I say, but you can use also that. And you push outwards. And what that does is it helps to reset the pelvis. So going back to your question, Helen, what I do that to start with. I then tend to put my hands across like that between the knees, and they push. You try and push out and they push in. Do you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to send you a little video of this. I'm going to cut it out of the class that I did for active aging and send you this little thing with these moves. Okay, remind myself, clip. And then so you do it so that you're working the inner thigh. So what you're doing is you're waking up the musculature and the whole sort of stability system around the hips. You can do it, I tend to do it with the feet flat on the floor first, so they push outwards into their hands and you'll feel the outside of the hips work. They then try and push the knees inwards, but you're pressing out. And you could do the same by putting a yoga block or a Pilates block in between the knees and try it. So something really hard, not just a ball, because that squishes. You want something that will really, so you get a lovely isometric contraction. And then what you do, Helen, so going back to then how you could then lead with that. On one side, you keep the hand there and they have to keep that pressure onto the hand or pushing out, you know, it would have to be the hand or your hand. And then they float the other knee up. Does that make sense?
Right, I think I've got it. Yeah.
So you imagine you're lying on your back. You place your left hand onto the outside of your left knee. And you actively try and press the left knee into your hand and then float the right knee up. Mm-hmm. And that gives you an incredible amount of stability, which is great. Okay. What I'm going to do is, I've got the back health workshop coming up. So what I might do, I'll be doing these exercises within that at some point in the day again. So I will send you a little video of those, just so you know what I'm talking about. And obviously you could do the same there as well. So you know when you let the knee drop out to the side, you know those ones where, again, feet are both on the floor but the knee drops out?
Yeah.
Again, with the supporting side, you get it to press outwards. Do you know what I mean? So again, you're really encouraging the stability of that side. And one side they may find very easy. The other side, they need that stability and that switching on. What can be quite nice to do is if they do feel that sort of pull, that catch when they do roll up or shoulder bridge, you can do your bridge, see if they, you know, if they're like, yeah, I can feel that little bit pull on my left side. Then do those exercises and then see if it makes any difference when they do it again. And you'll have to do a few reps because the joints sort of need to get into this newer position almost. But it can really, really help. And the same with shoulder bridge. So think about shoulder bridge. If they lift up into their bridge and you can see that dip on one side, obviously try and get them to align themselves and then have them again push outwards into the hand or press inwards. Do you know what I mean? To really engage around that and switch on the areas, because as I was saying, the stability of the sacroiliac joints relies highly on the musculature and the ligaments working together to provide the stability and the correct movement.
Okay, thank you.
Does that make sense? I'm sure there's more I could think of there, Helen. You know, so And the moves that you could look at doing as well, a simple, you know, all the sort of lower level moves like your clam or oyster. But again, you keep it small and you keep it where it's very much, you can add that, and it's a small amount of resistance. I'm not looking to load the joint. What I'm looking to do is wake up the musculature around there. If you do things like swimming, so again, this is if you're doing swimming, lying on your front legs only, and you see one leg lifts, pelvis looks fine, other leg lifts, and there's a real shift in the pelvis. So again, what you want to be looking at is, the way I teach swimming here is not with the leg long and the toes pointed, but I curl the toes under. So you're lying on your front, some of you have done this with me before, I know, and you curl the toes under, so you're on your toes, and then all you do is you straighten the leg, so the knee comes off the floor. And it's a really, really good one to highlight, you know, it's not intense, but it really shows the firing around, because what we want is, as I said earlier, these muscles don't create movement around the joints, the sacroiliac, they aid the movement, they work in tangent. So I don't want to look at the pelvis moving. What I actually want is just to see the connection. So I'm lying on my front, toes are curled under, and all I do is straighten the leg. So the toes don't lift yet, the knee just hovers, okay? And then if I feel they created and learned that stability, I then might get them to then hover the foot off, but I don't ever point the toes. I keep the toes pointing down. So that what you get is a very...
Pressing the heel backwards to lengthen the leg, is that what you mean?
Yes, yeah, but not so... That's exactly what it is, Jo, but just watch that it's smaller. Does that make sense?
I'm gonna have to try it.
Yeah, it's one of those. And again, what I might do is I will try and do a little video for you. I've got a massive project on over the next 2 weeks. And I just know I always end up giving myself
your loads.
Extra work. But it's really important that you know what I mean. It is that you're pushing the heel away, Jo, but I don't want the focus to be on pushing the heel away because it becomes too big a movement. Or a sense of too big a movement. Does that make sense? Oh, you're with me tomorrow, some of you. So I will remind me, will you, at just to run through that, and we'll just go through that. But I will also do, when I do the back health, I'll send you a little clip of the leg movements that I want. So that's what we want. We want... You know, you could then take it on to higher level movements like you're on all fours and so on. But on all fours, you've got nothing to tell you where you are apart from two palms and two knees. And it's, you know, from a stability point of view, it's very challenging. But that could be going into your latter phases where you're looking at, you know, just how they're now getting on. But the key for me with this... And in fact, I could do a little daily fix on this, is to have a little program for them that is simple, it's low level, it's quick, and even when they've progressed, it's their maintenance that, because as I've said, remember, this commonly is a reoccurring issue. And so what you want to be able to do is give them, you know, if they've got this quick program that they do, then it's going to really, really help just maintain their SI joint health, really. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I'm going to just do you a little program. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to record a little SI joint daily fix just for you guys to have. So that you can sort of just give it to people, because the key is the maintenance, the, you know, adherence to a little bit of movement that, and the thing is, again, we can't diagnose, but it's going to help any back person, you know, any back injuries. It's a healthy program. But because it provides that little bit of connection for the stability aspect, it will really help nail that. Any questions? Any other questions?
Not for me.
Has that helped?
Mm. Yeah, a lot, a lot. Get those videos as well.
Yeah, you're gonna make it. Go on. But I mean, obviously, I've just, you know, pulled the research together of the sort of anatomy of the sacroiliac joint. It's out there for all of you to read. But sometimes I think it can be quite nice just for somebody to pull it all together for you, so you don't have to. Louise or Tiffany, do you have a question?
I have it slightly in pregnancy too. With what you shouldn't do is things like not too much abduction, and would you still follow that path?
Exactly. And in fact, let me just pull up. And I will send you as well the references that I found some things on. I'm just finding, here it is. For you, Tiffany, because I know, especially with the pregnancy and so on the Core Concepts website page, they talk about things, home advice to give pregnant women, and I'll give you this the website link, is to avoid lying down on your back for long periods of time, particularly after the 19th week. Try lying on your side, preferably on your left, with a pillow placed between your knees. And another under the bump. And if your waist tends to sag into your bed, try putting a rolled up towel under your waist. So there, what you're looking at is just maintaining as much as possible a good alignment through the pelvis. They also suggest when you're turning over, to turn to your right when lying on your back. Now, this is all a bit technical, but they want you to turn on your right, arch your lower back, and bend both knees in one at a time. They say to turn your head to the right, take your left arm over to the right of your body, and then grab hold of the side of the bed, and then pull yourself up to help sort of reduce the pain. They talk about when getting out of bed, to roll onto your side with your knees bent and then push yourself up sideways. So they're very much thinking that you're not going to just lift yourself up. When you're coming to standing from a seated position, they say to keep your knees slightly apart, which obviously maintains that correct alignment through the sacroiliac joints. Lean forwards. And then push up with your hands. So really what they're looking to do is give yourself as much support as possible. But yeah, as you say, Tiffany, it's all about trying to, really keep the sit bones apart position of the knees, even if it requires something in between it, you know. And looking at that firing. Looking at that firing of the hip musculature. Because especially when you're pregnant, obviously, you know, the musculature of the abdominal, the deep abdominals, the back, is under strain. So you've got to get your strength from the hips and from the hamstrings and so on. So it's really looking to encourage that strength and that connection.
If we have it in pregnancy, and I've also had a lot of clients that have had it in pregnancy.
Yeah.
For me, it pretty much goes. I know some people it doesn't when they breastfeed, but it does pretty much once you've had the baby. But surely then, I mean, you must have some repercussions from it. Would you have to do some work?
Not necessarily, because if it's pregnancy induced, often that's due to the effects of the hormonal changes that you're going through. And because of breastfeeding, they obviously stay at a higher level because you're breastfeeding. So that's why you still have some issues. But I think you're going to catch me now because I, I'm going to throw a number out, and I might be wrong because I'm not looking at my pregnancy notes, but when your ligaments, I believe, have about, and don't quote me on this because I might need to just look it up and come back, I want to say 20% laxity. So when you're pregnant, they imagine it might not be 20%, so don't quote me on it, but imagine you've got a 20% window that these ligaments can loosen to. If during your pregnancy you overstrain them, so they loosen more, they will only spring back 20% post-pregnancy, post-breastfeeding. So you may have the pain during pregnancy because you've got this extra laxity, but then often after post-pregnancy, you return back, and if you've been okay, or there's been, you know, no issues, whatever, then you will spring back that 20%, become that stabilized position again. But if you've gone over through overstretching, through different strains, through heavy babies, through whatever, through starting to exercise too soon, your work, maybe, you know, you're standing a lot and so on, whatever, it could be that you don't go back to that stable position you had before. Would that make sense, Tiffany?
I thought I hadn't unmuted myself. My daughter kept running in. Yes. Yeah, that does make sense.
Yeah. I can come back with whether it's 20% or 10% or 18%. But it's that what we've got to realise is that, you know, because you have a window with those ligaments that they will come, you know, that you can play with. But you go outside that window, you don't get that stability back. Which is why some people will still get reoccurring issues and other people will be absolutely fine. Like, you know, the people that we know have pubic symphysis dysfunction, very painful in pregnancy, and then it just goes. So that's what I believe would be the answer there. Any other questions? No? Oh, yeah, go ahead. Hi, Louise.
Hello. My client has had really massive issues with her SI joint, which is, she's tested me to my limits. Now she's post-pregnancy, everything's still, because she went to chiropractor, she's still having pain. But what's been happening now is that it's travelling to her shoulders.
Right.
And I'm wondering, although it's lower back pain, can it go up to the neck and shoulders?
Yeah. So if you look at that list of muscles that I put down for you, you'll find the lats, for example. So they very much can, I mean, obviously, again, you know, this is just me hypothesizing. But because we have that, those connect, you know, the body, nothing ever acts on its own. And it could be for many reasons, but, you know, just the lats themselves affect the sacroiliac joint. So you've got the erector spinae does, the psoas does, they, you know, they're all so connected around that area that you, very much so, Louise, it could travel and refer up to the shoulder. The thing to always remember is don't, and it's a website of a guy that I absolutely love called Stop Chasing Pain. He's great. And that's it. Often you can chase pain and it's not where the pain site is, where the issue is. It can be somewhere completely different in the body. And from my point of view, Louise, I think all you can do is just keep looking at the alignment, keep looking at where the strain is when she's working. Does that make sense, Louise?
Yes, definitely, because I did have a revelation this week. Mm. I decided to think of fascia, I moved her foot with the spiky ball, and all of a sudden she was like, oh my God, I can move, and I thought, for God's sake, you know, just thinking, one forgot about where to release the feet can take a lot of tension up above.
Yeah, so definitely.
I started off with the feet, and all of a sudden we had a different session that week. Going to be doing quite a lot of that for me. So
yeah, and the other thing, Louise, is you know, for somebody who is obviously been in a lot of pain, she's still in a lot of pain, starting something away from the area where she has felt pain can often be the key, because she's not, you know, you're working on her feet, which to her, she thinks, oh, nothing to do with my painful area. But what it can do is then get her to relax, get her to let go. She's working on something which isn't going to flare up her panic pain alarm. So therefore, the session potentially naturally is going to feel better for her. And I'm not saying that working on her feet didn't help at all. But what I'm saying is sometimes we tend to focus into the painful area, the dysfunctional area, whereas actually let them go somewhere else first. They relax, and then before they know it, we're working into areas where they normally feel pain, but they're not already tightening up, getting ready for their pain. Does that make sense?
Yes, definitely.
But definitely, I mean, everything's connected. Everything is connected, and, you know, your feet are your foundation. So, you know, for you to do work with her, you know, potentially free standing work, Louise, you know, do a bit of bar with her, nice, gentle, do you know what I mean? But a bit of, you know, because that's going to help strengthen the posterior chain and up through into her hips without her realizing, and just watch the hip alignment as she's doing it. You know, keep just watching for some rotation, watching for some tilting, you know, and work her with that. But she's thinking, oh, I'm working on my feet. Whereas actually you're working on her whole body alignment.
Right, okay, yeah. I didn't think of that, because she's had such an issue with the SI joint.
Yeah.
She had some kind of disc issues as well, which made me just kind of stay away from it.
Yeah.
In a funny sort of way, and trying to work around it without overworking the pelvic joint.
Yeah.
She has challenged me a hell of a lot, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, my shoulder's hurting me. I'm thinking, what the hell?
Stop.
He has completely challenged me, but I didn't think about using the bar.
Yeah.
I might, when I see her next, start to work on that. But I do like this whole using the dressing gown belt, so I might try that.
Yeah.
With her next, just to start to strengthen those areas.
Yeah, and what you could do, Louise, is, do you remember the bar class I did with the mini loop? I mean, I'm not saying go to that intensity at all. But you know when we put the mini loop above the knee joint?
Yes.
And just that little bit of outward pressure as she's standing.
Yeah.
You know, that's going to waken and stabilise the whole area. You know, making sure that she, again, doesn't rotate or tilt the pelvis. And looking at the alignment, but, you know, using just that little outward pressure of one side, the other leg's going to stabilize. Always, by the way, you're staying within a pain-free range. I should say that, but you know what I mean? We're not going into pain, but, you know, that could be a progression, Louise, from maybe doing it lying on her back, you know. But I think a key for you with her, and I think it goes with any people who are suffering with chronic pain, is don't always start on the area where the pain is. Go somewhere else completely, because it's all still linked, but the sort of the sense of well-being they'll have because their panic and pain alarm is not getting ready to fire can be wonderful. Can be really wonderful.
Yeah, that's good. Like, yeah, no, you've got
me thinking now. Good. That's always good. That's always good.
Get the brain working on a Friday night, why not?
Louise, you're probably thinking, this woman, you'll be wanting to charge her double.
Trust me, my rates are going up. That's brilliant. Thank you, Jo.
No problem, no problem. So does anybody have any other questions or thoughts on this?
So I've just got one question. I mean, it is really, but it's quite a strange one.
Okay.
I had a bit of this pain during pregnancy. I'm now nearly a year post.
sorry.
Not at all.
And I also had a little bit of a separation, so I've been very limited on the class I've been doing myself.
Yeah.
During pregnancy and after. And I recently went to see a kinesiologist who told me that my psoas muscles on both sides were completely not working. which obviously in full muscle I was like, what? Anyway, I don't really know what he's done, but whatever he's done, my separation is pretty much closed, and the difference in the exercises that I can do now, the strength that I feel, is quite amazing.
Brilliant.
So I sort of, my question is, if, I mean, I don't know whether I was almost, because I was so scared to do certain things, was I allowing my body, you know, was I mean, I didn't even know you could shut down muscles, whether you can. I mean, have you ever heard of that?
It's really hard.
That's what happens to some of the clients. It's like, you know, well, actually, the muscles are not.
I mean, how did he know your psoas had shut down? Because it's so hard to touch the psoas because it's so deep.
It's very strange. It's a very strange thing. They sort of basically, they pinpoint an area in the back of your neck and your spine.
Right.
And then they tell you to do actually the exercise you've just been talking. So you lift the knee up.
Yeah.
And you put pressure on one side. And when he presses in a certain area, you have no strength. It's really strange. So normally you can do it and you can push against his hand. So he uses like your strongest global muscle. So he was using my quads.
Yeah.
If you put pressure in a certain part of my body and I had to push against his leg, there's certain times I couldn't do it.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where, not at all, Tiffany. It's a tricky, I'll have to have a good, can I come back to you on it?
Yeah. It was a very strange session, but it just shocked me, because I mean, obviously that's quite a big muscle.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge hip flexor, but it is, you know, misused. Whether or not it's the muscle of the soul, as people are saying at the moment, I'm not sure. Because, you know, most people say it's exhausted. And linking to the sacroiliac joints, I mean, what I've sort of read and my understanding so far is that the sacroiliac joints and the psoas are very linked. And when the sacroiliac joints feel as though they're under pressure, the psoas will try and support the sacroiliac joints. This is, you know, something that Liz Koch says a lot. And so you get then an exhausted psoas because it's trying to support the sacroiliac joints. I think possibly for you, Tiffany, there's a definite link between the psoas and the sacroiliac joints. I find that fascinating what he did. And I'd love to have seen your different movement, you know, afterwards, before, I've done a before and after, to sort of see, is it that you found that your connection was better or your strength was better?
Both. I mean, I feel like, obviously you don't know how much of it is in your mind, but I just suddenly feel like I can start to train myself in the Pilates that I was doing before, whereas I felt so, everything was, I had no connection before.
Yeah.
I was really struggling. I had no strength and I had no connection. And I also was a bit scared.
Yeah.
To do anything too much, because I felt like I had this operation. I didn't want to make it was very small, but I didn't want to make it any worse.
Yeah.
Just being really careful.
Did you feel that things were very heavy? You're like trying to lift a leg, it was very heavy.
Yeah, I probably would say it's heavy. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it was just like, it was like a massive, trying to just float one leg up, for example, felt very heavy and therefore the torso couldn't support it. Feeling.
But he also did, I mean, I was rotated and he also was putting wedges underneath me, which I felt a lot better after that.
Yeah.
So, I just felt released after. It was really strange.
Yeah.
But I just couldn't work, I still can't really work it out of my head.
Yeah, let me have a read into that, because if he says your psoas was completely switched off, Yeah, let me have a look at that and ask a few questions of my gurus.
Yeah. He said that it takes 10 to 12 weeks, once he's switched them on again, as he says,
it takes
10 to 12 weeks for them to start working again before you can start strengthening them.
Right.
Did he switch them on and off?
He did.
Who is he then?
So he got... kinesiologist, I know, it's a very strange concept.
A kinesiologist.
Okay.
It's a take on chiropractor.
Yeah.
But it's pinpointing areas in your body like acupuncture points and tension points, and then using your muscle strength sort of against that. So when he's pressing one point. Yeah, and then you're then using the muscles in another area. So he's very, when there's an area, there's pain. It's not necessarily the problem is where that pain is. So it's very hands-on, but it is very, very strange. I mean, I can't explain it now because it's too long and I don't want to take up everyone's time. But I mean, and I won't explain it properly. But look it up because it's very strange.
Yeah.
I just think of certain clients that have had physios and, and all sorts that have never been able to help them, and I just think, well, actually, my mum went to him, she sent me to him, because she went and had this neck pain for years, has chiropractors, had Pilates, had everything, and he sorted her out straight away, and she's never had a neck pain since.
Mm. I mean, anything like this, I find fantastic. You know, I'd never knock it at all, because it works. You know, it's worked for you, Tiffany. Do you know what I mean? And so it's one of those things where sometimes physio works, sometimes, you know, and I think whatever works for the person is great. I'll leave it with me and I'll come back to that, because I think it is fascinating. And obviously I don't know, obviously his knowledge is phenomenal, and it sounds as though, you know, he works through the sort of trigger points through the body, you know, and the connections and so on. Mm. Fascinating. I'm just wondering, because I think what would be interesting, Tiffany, is to think about the cues to help you stay connected to your psoas. Does that make sense? You know, when you're, you know, within this 10 to 12 weeks, you know, to think about the cues to use for yourself to keep that connection when you're doing a movement.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Fascinating. Fascinating.
Well.
Woo, like a magician. What was his name, Tiffany? Well, can you send me his details and I'll look on his website, and obviously I'm not going to, you know.
He's retired.